It's the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast, where we spend time chatting with expert gardening guests and we ask for their favorite tip. I'm Christy Wilhelmi. Thanks for joining me. My guest today is Amy Stewart, the New York Times best-selling author of The Drunken Botanist, Flower Confidential, and Girl Waits with Gun. She also wrote Wicked Plants, Wicked Bugs, and The Last Bookstore in America, to name a few of her other titles. Her books have sold over 1 million copies worldwide and have been translated into 17 languages. She lives in Portland, Oregon, with her husband, a rare book dealer, where they own an independent bookstore. Welcome to the podcast, Amy.
Hi, thank you.
I'm so happy to talk to you. I have to confess that I mostly want to talk to you for selfish reasons, because you've turned your knowledge of gardening into works of both fiction with your novels and fact, like Flower Confidential, that both entertain as well as educate. So I wanted to ask you, what came first for you, writing or gardening?
Oh, definitely writing. I always wanted to be a writer, but, you know, I just didn't have anything to write about when I was young. Nothing had happened yet. So when I was in my 20s, I was living in Santa Cruz, California, and I planted a garden for the first time, and that was, you know, the only interesting thing going on. So that's what I wrote about, and that turned into my first book, which was a memoir about my first garden called From the Ground Up.
Right. So where did Flower Confidential come from, just out of curiosity?
Well, that was my third book. And by then I had moved up to Eureka, California. And, you know, we were new to town and just kind of going out and doing stuff just to sort of find out more about the place we lived. And there was an open house at a flower farm. So I went just thinking that would be a fun thing to do on a Saturday. And I was really surprised at what a flower farm looks like. Like, I was picturing, you know, a field of sunflowers and poppies and a red barn in the middle and butterflies and bees. But it's nothing like that. I mean, it was very industrial. You know, it was much more like a factory. I mean, it was a greenhouse. It was mostly happening indoors. And what I didn't know is that I was visiting the largest cut flower farm in the United States, Sun Valley. They're huge. I mean, they have other farms in Southern California as well, but combined, that's the biggest grower of cut flowers. So I was just so interested in that, and that we don't really know where our flowers come from and how they get to the flower shop. So I realized right away it would be a fascinating thing to research, because I would get to go all over the world, because most of our flowers come from Latin America, and in Europe they mostly come from Africa. So it's a global story.
I wanted to ask you what your garden looks like and what you like to grow.
Yeah. Well, so I just moved recently to Portland, Oregon, and I live in a condo now.
So I
have no garden whatsoever. This last year or two has been about jettisoning anything that needs taken care of.
Oh, okay.
Well, except I am still married, so don't panic about that. But
Don't jettison the husband.
But I have no pets and no garden for, you know, kind of the first time in my life. I do live a block away from Washington Park, and if you've ever been to Portland and you've been to the International Rose Garden or the Japanese Garden, that is almost my backyard. It's like a block away. So
nice.
Yeah, so I can claim credit for that. But in Eureka, I did have a big garden. And, you know, I really loved to grow salvias. I think they're fantastic drought-tolerant plants, and they attract a lot of hummingbirds and bees and butterflies. So salvias were always my favorite. And even being on the coast in Humboldt, where it's kind of chilly, there are a lot of them that still did pretty well. But I also was always growing things connected to the books I was writing. So I had a poison garden for a while when I was writing Wicked Plants, and I had a cocktail garden when I was writing Drunken Botanist.
What were some of the things in your poison garden, just out of curiosity?
Castor bean.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A lot of datura and nightshades.
Mm-hmm.
Hemlock, of course, which is practically a weed, so you don't really even have to grow it. It'll just be there. Tobacco, foxglove, digitalis, things like that.
Nice.
A lot of them were kind of, and also like opium poppies.
Uh-huh, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
And a lot of those need a little bit of heat to do well, so they didn't do so great on the coast. They really took a lot of coddling for them to look like anything in Humboldt, but yeah, that was a fun one. And it was kind of a spooky garden, too, because I had tombstones as plant markers. And, you know, I had a like a resin skeleton. So I had body parts kind of buried in the garden and stuff like that. So it was
nice.
It was creepy and fun.
I remember seeing a promotional video for Wicked Plants, and that I assume that was shot in that garden.
No, but I think there were photographs from the garden that were kind of weaved in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cause you were in a lounge chair of, and it was all shot in black and white, and there were some dark plants in the background and that kind of thing. That's very cool. So you're in Portland. Do you get winter enough that you can't grow anything if you wanted to there?
Well, yeah, you know, literally as we talk, we're waiting for a snowpocalypse to arrive. So I've never lived in a place where it snows, and we're in for a week of it.
Oh.
But the great thing about Portland is that you really get seasons. So my neighborhood is full of flowering trees that are just about to bust out. I mean, as soon as we're done with the snow, it's going to be wave after wave of ornamental plums and cherries and magnolias and dogwoods, and it goes right up into the summer. And then we get this incredible fall color. Like, it will stop you in your tracks. It's so vivid.
Nice. That's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty great. But yeah, Portland, you know, the Pacific Northwest is very much, they love their ornamental foliage up here, right? So they love their black Mondo grass and stuff
right.
like that. Yeah,
that,
so you see
sense.
A lot of that around the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, I imagine that in your research for Wicked Plants and the Drunken Botanist that you found answers to a question that I often ask myself when I see plants where one part is toxic and the other is edible, like rhubarb, for example. You know, the leaves are poisonous, the stems are not. And I always wonder, who was the first person who figured this out? Did you run across any of those discoveries in your research?
Well, I think that's just that's part of ancient human history, you know? So, I think it was probably a lot of very unfortunate experimentation, but you know, you think about it, if you really think back to long, long ago when we were hunters and gatherers, that was all the knowledge, you know?
Right.
Knowing about plants and knowing about bugs and animals, that was everything that there was to know. That was all of human knowledge.
Right.
And so I think people figured it out and passed it on.
Yeah. I think about the incident or the historical moment where I forget who it was, but he stood on the steps of the town hall and ate a tomato in front of everyone to prove that it wasn't poisonous.
Yes.
And that, you know, I guess there were moments like that throughout history where we discovered we could actually eat something.
Well, that's so interesting, really, because when Europeans, first of all, isn't it crazy to think about Italian cuisine not having tomatoes?
No.
But they come from here.
It's a new world food, yeah.
They come from the Americas. So, yeah, what were those people eating? But anyway, the interesting thing about that, though, is that these Europeans came over to the Americas, and they saw tomatoes, and they very rightly and correctly said, that is a nightshade. That can kill you. It's like, good for them that they knew that and understood it. So, yeah, the only way to be proven wrong about that was to try it yourself. And I think there was some talk of, well, the native people can eat them, but maybe there's a reason why they can eat them and we can't. And there again, there's some intelligence in that, right? Because they might have been thinking with their limited kind of pre-Darwin understanding of nature, they might have still in some sense been thinking perhaps some people evolve to be able to eat this food, but that doesn't mean that I can, coming from England,
right.
eat it.
Yes.
So yeah, I know. That was all pretty smart.
Now, your books feature characters who either garden or tend land in some way, like Norma in the Kopp Sisters books. And The Last Bookstore in America, which came out in 2009, as a side note, you must be clairvoyant because you essentially predicted the future of legalized cannabis in California when you... it's like, this is exactly what's happening right now, which just happened in your book. Where did inspiration for these characters and stories that include gardening come from?
Well, Last Bookstore in America was really something I wrote kind of as a lark in between other books.
Uh-huh.
We had just bought our bookstore, Eureka Books, which is in Eureka. And there was a day, it's very nerve-wracking to buy a business, and there was a day shortly after we bought it when, like, hardly anyone came into the store all day. Mm. It was just a ferocious storm outside. No one was leaving the house, and we're just sitting there watching the clock tick by, making no money, and, you know, thinking, oh, what a disaster. And I at one point, I said something like, because you couldn't even see outside. It looked like we were alone, like we were on an island or something. And I said, it's like we're the last bookstore in America. And then we just sort of got to joking about, like, why would a bookstore be the last one? Like, what would have to happen? And this was right when ebooks had just been invented, and everyone in the book world was panicking about that ebooks were going to destroy the printed book and destroy bookstores. And so it seemed obvious, like, oh, okay, well, what if all that came to pass? Mm-hmm. And bookstores were destroyed, but then why would the last one still be operating? And in Humboldt County, you know, marijuana is a huge percentage of the economy, probably 30% of Humboldt's economy. So obviously it would be because it was selling pot. So the thing about that book, I mean, I wrote it really fast and I published it just as an ebook. It was just quick and over and done with. But I predicted so many things about both ebooks and also Amazon, because the Amazon-like company in that book started going around opening brick and mortar stores. And
yes.
Amazon, yes, I know. And
yes.
Amazon has actually done that. And tobacco companies. So, yeah, I know. I feel very, I get no credit for this. So thank you for noticing that, because nobody has noticed that.
You get all the credit, because I was reading pages of this. I read it while I was on a backpacking trip, and I'm reading this, and I'm like, Andrew, my husband, I'm like, Andrew, you've got to read this.
Yeah.
She's totally, this was written when? And, you know, it's like, it's incredible, because there's so much that has come to pass that is exactly as you've written in that book.
Right. Yeah. I know. But anyway, you were asking about gardening. So yes, there's a character in that novel who has this really fantastical, almost impossible, amazing garden, and where, of course, she's growing the best weed. And that's the weed that everybody wants to get their hands on, because it's the one that's going to make somebody a bajillion dollars. So yeah, that in that book. But, you know, really, the Cop Sisters novels, I mean, they're based on a true story. And I actually resisted the advice of my publisher, who was like, if you're going to switch to fiction, you need to write a botanical novel so your readers will come along, and then you can write other kinds of fiction. But I just thought, I'm not going to do a strategic thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's too hard to write a book. And it takes too much out of you. And it takes a year or two or three or 5 years out of your life that you're never getting back. Like, you know.
Or 10 in
my case. Right. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I may have started when I was, let's say, 45 writing the Cop Sisters novels. And I was thinking, like, I'm never going to be 45 again. So
right.
I am giving my 45th year to this and not to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I really refused that idea of, you know, they wanted me to write a book like kind of like Signature of All Things, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert's wonderful book about a woman botanist.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that would have been contrived. I didn't have that idea. That would have been a strategic move.
Right.
So in these Cop Sisters novels, they are based on a true story, and they really did live on a farm, so there's no escaping that fact. But my little kind of inside joke to myself is that Constance, the eldest sister, is supposedly responsible for the vegetable gardening, but she hates it, and she refuses to do it. So that's my own little, like, pushback against the idea that I have to have characters in my books who garden.
I love that. But you have Norma, who cares for the animals on the property.
Yes.
And she's really into it. And I feel like I related to all of the sisters. We are segueing into talking about these sisters, by the way, right now. It was my next question. You're on your fifth book coming soon. And Amazon Studios is developing a TV series based on it, which is so exciting. And something I hope for myself, if I can ever get my garden focused novel published. And so tell us about Constance Kopp for those who have not been indoctrinated.
Well, she was one of the first women deputy sheriffs in the country. And I found her by accident while I was going through some old newspapers. So this is not someone that anyone's ever heard of. She'd been really forgotten about. And she's not even written about in the history of women in law enforcement, which is amazing because she did a lot more as a woman cop than her peers, other women at the time. So anyway, I just kind of fell in love with her story, and she had two sisters, and the sisters are also kind of amazing, and I've put together hundreds of newspaper clippings about their real life, and I've tracked down family members, and I've gone around and visited the places where they lived, and so I've kind of reconstructed the lives of these three women that nobody's ever heard of, and I'm writing a series of novels about them. So they're kind of sort of crime fiction because she was a deputy sheriff, but they're kind of a lot more historical fiction. I mean, they're not exactly whodunits because I'm writing about what Constance was actually doing on a day-to-day basis, which wasn't always, you know, figuring out who killed the vicar or
right.
whatever. Yeah,
right.
Like that's not what she did.
Right. And I love that at least in the first one, which is the one I've read, The Girl Waits with Gun, that you have Constance, there's no love interest. It's just Constance and her sisters, and they're,
yeah.
you know, and they're doing their thing. And I won't, there's a spoiler in there that I won't reveal, which was a total jaw dropper. And thank you for, doing that. People will have to find that out on their own.
Yeah.
I really liked that she is a standalone character, you know, and women's fiction, I guess, is defined by stories about women who are not trying to find a husband and find, you know, getting married or that stuff that goes along with that kind of a life. And she lives completely outside of that, at least in Girl Waits
yeah.
with Gun. So I appreciate that. I think it's great.
Yeah, that was a big thing for me, is that I didn't want any of them to get boyfriends. Like, I didn't want that to be the purpose of the book.
Right.
So that's been a really fun thing about writing these books, is that that's not part of the plot. And it's so interesting, especially reading, like, I read a lot of crime fiction written in the 1910s. Mary Roberts Rinehart was a very popular crime novelist who wrote a lot of women-centered crime novels, and they all had to get married by the end. And it was so funny because in a lot of her books, it feels very tacked on. Like, you hardly even see it coming, and it's just like at the end, she's like, oh, and of course I married that cop. Because, you know, we are not going to let women get out of this without marrying them off to somebody. So, yeah, I'm very much enjoying not doing that.
Great. Well,
yeah.
That is, I'm excited to read the next four that are on their way. Well, the fifth is, do you have a release date for the fifth yet or no?
Yeah, it'll be out in September.
Okay.
September 17th.
We await with bated breath.
Yes.
Okay. It is tip time. Do you have a favorite tip that you would like to share with the Garden Nerd audience?
Yeah, you know, something I would suggest, and this comes from Drunken Botanist, which is a book about all the plants we turn into alcohol. I planted a cocktail garden of my own, and something I realized is that there are so many things in the garden that are great in cocktails and kind of aren't that useful otherwise in the kitchen. And so really use them. And so what I'm thinking of are like scented geraniums,
mm-hmm.
Lemon verbena, lavender. I mean, you can kind of sort of cook with lavender, but hardly anybody really does. All of those things are these really floral, bright, herbal flavors that are so good in cocktails. They're really good, especially like in gin and vodka drinks. So my suggestion is grow those if you like them and use them to make simple syrups. You just throw, you know, equal parts sugar and water in a saucepan and heat it up till the sugar melts and then put a ton of fresh herbs in there and let it all sit and cool and strain it out and stick it in the freezer. And you can make fabulous drinks that taste like roses and lavender. And these are not things you can easily buy at a liquor store. So they're totally worth growing and making drinks from if that's the kind of thing you're into.
That's perfect. And so do you throw the herbs in after you've turned off the heat? Or
yes.
While you let it boil?
No, after you've turned off the heat. And the reason is that those volatile floral flavors dissipate so quickly. It's like with basil. You know, you don't add basil at the beginning of making a sauce, right? Because you lose the flavor. You put it in right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, wait until the end as it's starting to cool down so that those flavors won't all go away.
That's a great idea. I have to say I've tried making rose geranium, no, it was lime geranium ice cream before, and I have a Vitamix, and it purees the crap out of everything, and it released all the chlorophyll.
Right.
And so yes. I had, like, chlorophyll grass, you know, it was like grass-flavored ice cream.
Yeah,
it was terrible.
Exactly. Tastes like grass clippings.
Yeah,
I know.
This is so the simple syrup kind of solves that problem.
It does. That's definitely the way to just get the floral flavors out without all the other. That's why you sort of also don't want to muddle those things into a cocktail, because it does the same thing. It crushes it, and it's, it just tastes like a mouthful of chlorophyll.
Yeah. Well, that's a great tip. Thanks for sharing that, Amy.
Sure.
And thank you. It has been great having you on the Garden Nerd podcast.
Thank you.
How do people find you?
Just go to amystewart.com, and you'll see I send out a newsletter, and there's a bunch of social media buttons. You can find me on Instagram or Twitter, Facebook, wherever you are. I'm probably there too.
Okay, right. And you're on Goodreads as well. So if people want to follow
Goodreads,
you.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome. Yeah. Yes. I also follow you on Goodreads.
So. Oh, nice. Great.
All right, garden nerds, you'll find a link to Amy's website and books on gardennerd.com this week. We'll also post a link to her social media handles, and we'll share a series of videos hosted by Territorial Seed Company, where she shows you how to make some awesome cocktails from the garden. That's it for this week. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen. Visit us for tons of free gardening information on gardennerd.com. Show your support for this podcast and the other free stuff on Garden Nerd by becoming a Patreon subscriber. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter under Garden Nerd 1, on Facebook as gardennerd.com, and of course, our Garden Nerd YouTube channel. Happy gardening!